Motion second.
Mr. Chairman, I know the chairman meant to say that Rogers Water was your commission meeting, but the chairman accidentally said the planning commission meeting.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. Been to too many of those, maybe that's what it is. The November 20th Rogers Water Sewer Commission meeting. So we will bring in action to approve the minutes from October 16th, 2023. All in favor, say aye.
I make a motion that we, I will make a motion that we approve.
You're moving today, maybe.
From October 16th, 2023, Water and Sewer Commission's meeting. Second.
All right, motion and a second, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. All right, I think we're going to bring up
John Evans.
Yeah, John Evans for the 2023 audit.
So before you start, did you get the second? I didn't know, I thought I heard.
Page second.
I'm aware there was a second.
Sorry about that.
Try not to get trouble.
No, I heard down that way, and I said second, and I just want to make sure that it was reported accurately. Thank you, sir.
I'm John Evans with Landmark CPAs, and proud to please present the audit report for the year ended June 30th, 2023. Just want to make a few brief comments on the audit report. The actual opinion on the financial statements, report on the financial statements is a good, clean, unqualified opinion on the financial statements, which is good. Our audit report does point out there is a change in accounting principles because of a new government accounting standard that was adopted for the year ended June 30, 23. Without getting all the details, it required you to, on subscription-based information technology arrangements, software, that kind of thing, to capitalize that on the books and as an asset, and also have a corresponding liability. And the asset gets amortized, and the liability is produced as you make your monthly payments on that. So it really doesn't have much impact on the income statement. The GASB, the county, government accounting standards board thought that was a good thing for governments to have to do. So, but there is that change in the financial statements this year that was new. One thing I'd like to point out on the balance sheet, the statements of net position, and this is another accounting standard that was issued probably 10 years ago. There's a net pension liability, $3.2 million as a liability. That's an actuarially determined number from the Arkansas State Retirement System. It does not indicate, or it does not mean that the water and sewer needs to write a check to somebody for $3.2 million. It's strictly an accounting deal where the accounting standard says that that potential liability down the road the state might have if they shut down the plan right now, they spread it among all the city governments and county governments and commissions, and that's your share of it. And that varies year to year based on stock market performance and things like that. But it does not mean that the water commission owes $3.2 million or the sewer $3.2 million to anybody. You've paid everything you need to pay into the retirement system during the year. The other report that we have to issue because you're a government entity is a report on internal control over financial reporting and compliance with laws, regulations, that kind of thing. And glad to report that there was no findings. There were no findings indicated on that report. So, yeah, those are my comments. If you got any questions, be glad to answer.
And I don't want to go too deep in this, but the only thing that I had, you mentioned that net pension liability was $532.2 million. Yeah. I'm just kind of curious if something had changed from 22 to 23 because that number had gone up.
Stock market.
The It's just, that was that much valuation change.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, we just get numbers straight off the actuarial report that the state does. But that's the only thing I can think of. Yeah, because it varies considerably. It was like 800,000 the year before and went to 3.2 million on the sewer. And I think the water is like 2 million.
The sewer was 5 to 2. And I thought that was a fairly large increase.
But the way that, I mean, without, you know, the way the accounting flows, it doesn't impact the income statement very much because it ends up in another place on the balance sheet. But sometimes the general public looks at that number and says, oh my gosh, the water and sewer commission haven't paid their, retirement money into the state. And that's not the case.
Do you need to have a motion to accept the audit as presented?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it would be appropriate to entertain a motion if the commission so chooses to approve the audit report. My understanding is that Mr. Evans' firm is going to issue a final report after the commission approves, and then that's going to go up to legislative audit within 10 days proceed by Rogers Waterton.
Okay. I don't care about the discussion. I just didn't know if we needed a motion.
You need a motion.
Well done.
Thank you, sir.
Can we get a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Okay. To accept the 2023 audit?
Yeah.
I'm getting in trouble.
With the Rogers Water Utilities Water.
I'm having trouble. No.
I'll second that.
Yeah, I make a motion to, okay, never mind. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, a motion and second on the floor to accept the audit report as presented.
All favor say.
Motion and second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
John, right.
Thank you all.
John, good to see you. Thanks,
thank you, John.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Come to financial reports.
Once he finalizes that within the number of days, then do you typically present, do we get a final copy of this? Because I know a lot of this was to be dated, there were things that would be finalized, but do we typically get the copy of that audit at some point, or is it just made
by? We can. I don't know if we typically do, but we can, and then we have to file it.
Yeah, this is a little bit different than we usually you get at your screen a final report. Mm-hmm. They have a different procedure.
Okay.
A great form by Landmark this year where they want you to approve their audit report before they issue the final. When we get the final, it's got to go up to legislative audit within 10 days.
Okay.
So I think the commission would definitely get the final.
Just once it's report. Okay. And once it's finalized, it would be available if we want it.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So what you see up there is our monthly income comparison. This includes September, October, so we're getting closer to being on target here and being on schedule with the audit behind us and everything else. But you can see on the water, we are a little bit behind from the same period of last year. Everything looks good there. What we looked at, a lot of the expenses, we are selling more water and sewer. I had said that we weren't selling as much, and we didn't in the last month of the summer. But what you're seeing here is software, salaries, those two mostly is what's being different year over year. And when we go down here to sewer, you'll see we've got a very skewed number here in September. That number there includes the $2.47 million grant. There's really nowhere else to put it other than miscellaneous income. But we could take these numbers here and adjust that and put it as a footnote or something for you guys so that the change from the same period last year is a little more accurate of what we're looking at. But we're doing well. Most of the expenses, everything you look, if you go through all the numbers, expenses are really tight. Software and software implementation, which we've had a lot of lately, that implementation is a one-time thing. The software, obviously, as a service, goes on and on. But lots of implementation, lots of software, and of course, salaries, and that's where it's been. That's where the increase in the expenses has gone. We're selling just a little less water, but looking good overall, looking real good overall.
How's the hunt for the new person going?
We've made an offer, he accepted, he'll start January 2nd. Jared Sigmund, he's from here, grew up in Rogers, went to the U of A, had his CPA, went out for an internship at the city of Smyrna, and has been there 14 years since in successive roles, and he's looking to get back here close to family. His and his wife's family are both from here, the area, so we're looking forward to having him. And he's been in city government the whole time.
I didn't get his name.
Sigmund?
Sigmund. Where is Smyrna?
Suburb of Atlanta.
Okay.
So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Any other questions on the finance?
Easy peasy.
All right.
We'll go. All right, Mr. Sartain.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. And as I was going through the through my documentation for the report, I don't think I had included.
Yeah, right up here.
For some reason, my entire report didn't get in there, and only my plan review sheets. October plan review. This is going to be a little bit skewed this month because we had our changeover to City Works, where we started reviewing plans in OnBase. So this list is not going to capture everything that was all the reviews that came in this month. So I think next month our reports are going to be looking a little bit different. Those are going to be reports that are generated from our electronic plan review process. And we'll try to kind of give you guys a little demo and show you how that's working since we're still trying to get some of the bugs worked out on that end. October was a significant month, even with the ones I'm not showing. We had, pretty much an average number of plan reviews. Nothing really big. We had a lot of commercial. We're still seeing a lot of townhomes. A couple of hotels we're looking at. So the development's still going strong in Rogers. For the project status, those highlighted are status changes, and so we're kind of moved into the next step in design on the Western Corridor transmission main, where we're putting together those concept plans and also doing the property boundary surveys, environmental reports, geotechnical and cultural resource surveys, and really trying to nail down that alignment. So as part of that, that'll be moving into the preliminary plan phase. We're also working on some of the large meter replacements, looking at some of those around town that are old and that need replacement. Under construction, we moved into construction on the three that we approved bids on last time: manhole rehab, pipe bursting, and cured in place pipe project. And we'd had our final walkthrough, and we're substantially complete on the Bentry and Berry Farm lift station decommissioning. So we have two fewer lift stations to maintain in our system, which is always a good thing. I will make a note that Walnut Street widening, I think, as I reported last time, that's going to be rebid, and they're looking at a February bid letting date. The reason that was pulled and sent back out to bid was for maintenance of traffic plans on that project. Wasn't a consideration for all of the utility work that would be done prior to the actual street and drainage improvements, and so that'll be sent back out to bid with those maintenance of traffic plans included.
Just some administrative items here.
the software. We're still in that stabilization period with CityWorks, working out some of those bugs and issues, and we'll continue to do so probably for the next couple of months. And also working through some workflows with Timmons, mainly in the engineering department. We're kind of working through what that development inspection looks like, getting all the testing documented electronically. And as we were doing this, we realized that there were some side effects, such as now that we're not writing letters anymore. We used to send those letters to the state every time we approve a project, so they can keep track of them. So now we're looking at getting the state plugged in to the CityWorks system, possibly so that they can keep track of what we've approved through RWU. And then, of course, upcoming software rollouts. I'm sure Jerry will talk a little bit about this as executive time. And then we're really excited about the Tyler project accounting, so we can keep track of all of our project budgets in Tyler, as opposed to what we do now is pretty much just keeping track of spreadsheets. So we're excited about that. For the dryer project, we have, I don't know if we've executed that quite yet. We had it all wrapped up on Friday. If we haven't yet, we're just about to sign the contract with Huber after some negotiations with them regarding what pieces and parts are going to be included with the equipment package. So I think that's ready to go. And we're working toward the 30% design plans with the design team. Intend to issue that contract amendment for the guaranteed maximum price in March. And so our engineering team's staying really busy developing those 30% plans. For the Western Corridor water main connection, I think I mentioned Garver's working on some records research and surveys and collecting data for that project. The capacity improvement project, we've got a technology workshop coming up where we'll be talking about different screening technologies, disinfection, filtration, and things like that to kind of get an idea of what equipment we're going to select and design the project around. So that's kind of still in the conceptual phases. And I just also wanted to mention that we purchased a light duty pickup truck. That's a Ford Maverick four-wheel drive, and they put those back onto the state bid. And so we were able to order that directly off the state bid for $29,976. We budgeted $35,000. For engineering, we're basically just running around town checking on jobs. You know, there's really no reason for us to need a half-ton pickup truck to do that. So instead of getting 12 miles per gallon, we're going to get about, hopefully, in the mid-20s, and hopefully this thing doesn't fall apart. So we're excited about that. It'll be delivered tomorrow. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
On that capacity improvement technology workshop, is that an internal work? You know, is that internal people working on that? I don't know if it was somebody who contracted with someone.
We have our engineering team.
Our engineering consultant, we'll meet out at the plant. We'll have Todd and myself and David and Sean probably. Okay. And we'll kind of go through those various technologies and have a discussion.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Brian, I had a quick question for you. How do y'all handle your MOTs? You were talking about it earlier with the project. I mean, is that part of the planning phase? I mean, is that something you ask for after the fact?
So we don't have a whole lot of involvement in that. Okay. You know, we go through the utility design, and then it's really up to more on the engineer and the city engineer to determine, you know, what they're going to be able to do as far as the detouring and maintenance of traffic.
Yeah, it's y'all that are closing the streets, though. I mean, well, right. Not y'all, but it's the street cuts for the utilities. So I was just wondering if y'all handled that in house.
On smaller projects, generally we'll have somebody like Lanex or somebody like that, you know, put together a sketch to get those street closure permits. We don't do those in house. Generally those will be part of a major widening project where they're actually be engineered and approved by RDOT.
So it's y'all coordinating with the engineering department on how to handle that?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Just curious.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, I've got to go back to the tab.
So typically, I just say our DMR is looking good, no big deal. After doing a couple of tours this week, I realized that we've got some new commissioners, so I thought I'd take a minute. So this milligrams per liter is a concentration that we have a limit that's set it to one. We're at a 0.13, so approximately, you know, a factor of 10 under it. So we meet that fairly handily. This 7-day average, max 7-day, what that is that takes our concentration over a period of 7 days throughout the whole reporting period, and that's our worst 7 days. So we have to take our worst 7-day average and report that, and that's the reason that limit is higher. So over the month we can average one, over seven we can average two. Now what I like to say is when you see like this 0.15 and 0.15, or you know, 0.2 and 0.15 and 0.1, that just shows the consistency of the operation as much as anything. Then this pounds per day, what that is it looks at how much flow you've got and then what that concentration is that tells you your total mass that you're treating. So that's what these numbers actually mean, what we're doing. If you see a less than like this, what that means is that's a technical term is a titration. What it means is the lab has to guess approximately what that is going to be, and they have to set up their dilutions to fall within the range of measurement for that given test. And they guessed high in this case, so all they can say is, well, it's less than the minimum we could account for there. So give you just a brief description of what these are. And you'll notice like some of these are different in different periods of the year. And so this like the CBOD, it's different here, it's different there. That has to do with water temperature, expected water temperature, and how our bacteria would react to that. So that's at the time that this permit was issued, that had to do with technology and what their technological expectation was. So, you know, spend a little time on that with you today.
Your ones and your twos, is that a 1 point? So back to the top, is
sure.
That yes. One, this will be 1.0 or is it 0.1? It is there's a difference in if it's 1.0 versus 1.3 versus
it
so,
is
so one, it would be 1.0 and 2.0.
Yes, sir.
In comparison to 0.2.
Okay. Yes, sir. Any other questions? Our fats, oils, and grease and inspections continue to go well. We had a little bit of problem with the middle school, but you know they're always very. Very willing to work with us, but they understand it's there. They're working on it. They're doing the best they can. So I saw that was there, and I knew Miss Page.
The guys are working well with us.
I've seen it. Oh my God.
Yeah, they're working on it. I don't see any long term issues at all. We may have a little bit of an issue with the Chinese restaurant down the street. We're working with those guys, but it's a large expense for them. We're trying to get them to get some other estimates and things like that. But those are the two that are notable that are in the works on fog. Just draw your attention to those. The industrial side is going pretty well. Did have some violations, with Ozark Mountain Poultry and Southeast Poultry. Ozark Mountain Poultry has we've been trying to get them to upgrade their aeration equipment for a good little bit. And that's what the issue is with the CBOD. I think even with their surcharges and their violation levels, I think what they're paying is probably less than what they can actually treat for themselves. So I don't know how motivated they are to get that taken care of. We've been talking to them about it for a while. At this point, with all three of our treatment trains running, it's not as big a deal to us right now. We have that capacity available. But it may be something that whenever we do our rate study that our consultant needs to look at and go, we need to make sure you're staying out of the violation zone. It's one thing to be in surcharge, but violation is something different. The significant events, our solids handling coordinator went for his class 3 training, passed on his first attempt. The wastewater licensing for treatment side, class 1 and 2 are set up fairly, I don't want to say easy to pass, but if you're paying attention, you can pass. Class three is a different test. You really have to study for that. And what happens is a lot of the guys that go through the class 1 and class 2, they come into class 3 expecting it to be similar. Even though you warn them that, hey, you really ought to study for this one probably even before you go. It's a difficult test. So for him to pass it on his first attempt is very happy with that. Worked on the dryer project pretty consistently with engineering. There's some pretty tight deadlines there with our financing and things like that. So we've prioritized that and getting that moving. We did coat the clarifier launders that you guys approved. That went fairly smoothly, and it solved our issue with some of the leaks through the concrete that had been getting worse. So the next time we get an inspection, I won't be nervous about the guy actually giving me something I have trouble with. The gearbox in our at our last inspection, we had a piece of equipment there that is actually not on our treatment train. It's something that saves us money when we go to the landfill. So by compacting and screening and grinding up some of our screenings, it saves us a little bit of money going to the landfill. It's been broke for, I think, about 3 months. No, 6 months. We've been waiting for a gearbox to show up on that. And it was manufactured incorrectly. So when it showed up, we had to return it. So that was disheartening, to say the least. But we did treat 300 million gallons in October. If we had no INI, we should have been about 263 and a half. So about 36 inches of INI. That's only about 3.3 inches of rain over 8 events. So that's right on our historical average for October. So overall, really not a bad month for INI, but fairly dry. Any questions?
So is it going to take them another 6 months to get us the gearbox?
No. Part of the reason it took 6 months the first time was because they did not offer an expedite option to move to the front of the line. So you were just there waiting on them to change out the tooling and things like that on their line. Because they messed up, we've been able to get them to move us up, although I haven't heard a firm date on when they will get it to us, but they did say it will be faster than 6 months.
And are they going to give us a break on the price?
You would think so, but I doubt it. They are still the only people you can get it from.
Yeah. Not enough competition.
It's a great question.
Okay.
What was that?
Let's see. Let me check it. No.
I'll give you their number. I love
them. You'll never see another good box.
Yeah.
That's so
a shame.
We've now did this twice where we've talked about people that exceed their allowable limit being cheaper for us to treat it than them to treat it.
Right.
And I know we said the rate study's coming.
It is.
I don't know the way to ask this. can we make sure that they get ahead of this so we're not playing catch up all the time? Because all these companies are going to put it back on us if it's cheaper.
So we're treating millions of gallons a day. They're treating hundreds of thousands gallons a day.
Yeah.
So for them to be able to treat it less than us is very difficult to start with. That's number one. Number two, dealing with that is we're not allowed to put profit into a rate. So it becomes very difficult for a consultant to tell us, hey, you know, even though you can treat it for this, these guys want to treat it for this, so you got to charge them at least this much.
You can make it painful for them to not treat it cheaper than we can.
We could make it where our where we have a more punitive activity, I guess, for violations. That's allowed under EPA, but those would be fines or fees. And up to this point, we've tried to avoid those. Just as a general rule, that would be a commission discussion if you want to introduce those.
This is our second time to talk about people kind of waving their hat at it.
Right. If it's consistent, we have had an industry. It's been about 3 years back, and it's already slipped my mind which one it was offhand because I wasn't prepared for that. But where they were kind of waving their hat at it consistently, yeah. We wrote them a cease and desist letter, and then we wrote them a plan of action of repair that they had to follow, or the hammer was we took their water away. Yeah.
What typically is it that they're exceeding on the CBOD, or is it?
This one was CBOD because they're lacking aeration, and I have lost my spot, and I'm terribly sorry. That's back to
mine. You're too far.
There we go. Because their aeration is bad, so that's where you end up with the CBOD sitting in the tanks.
Yeah.
Aeration is something that they can actually add to fairly inexpensively, but
what is it typically? Is it that?
Yes,
or is it the gambit?
It's the gambit. So we have total suspended solids, CBOD, ammonia, and total phosphorus that we actually surcharge for, because those are our main costs of treatment at the plant. So what they typically do when they treat phosphorus at that level, they're going to feed chemicals to it.
Yeah.
Whereas we're treating with biology.
Yeah.
We don't treat our phosphorus with chemicals, so it's very inexpensive for us. The ammonia is an aeration issue. CBOD is an aeration issue. TSS is a detention time.
Mm-hmm.
Where you see having problems with TSS and CBOD at the same time is because they don't have enough tankage. So they have to allocate area at their plant away from production and go to treatment. That's a tough one to talk them into, and a lot of times we have to beat them over the head with something for that.
Yeah.
But if it's just CBOD, then typically they can add aeration, and that's not as big a deal for them to provide a blower.
So I think it was about 6 months ago we ran into the same thing, and I think it was Tyson back then, and they were phosphorus.
Yes. If
my memory serves me right. But,
right. I think they're pretty consistently in the surcharge. I don't think they've been in violation much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Now, Ozark Mountain Poultry has been in the violations before.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Several times.
Yeah. I think, was it Southeast Poultry?
Yeah.
Yes.
Southeast Poultry.
Yeah. That's the one that we actually butted heads with.
That's the one that stunk up half a town.
Yeah.
Yes.
But does that break out differently on the financial? Because you have on the water, you've got penalty, and on the sewer side, you've got penalty surcharges. This is a surcharge. All the conversation right now is regarding a surcharge. So there's obviously, from an income perspective, there's got to be another penalty category, because the last month was 39. Well, in September, it's 39,000. So I'm assuming we have a penalty. Somehow we are charging penalties. This is just a surcharge.
Yeah.
What would the other penalties be?
This one, well, our penalty that we charge is for treatment, the cost of treatment. The violation, we don't have a differentiation.
We don't. It's just more surcharge. If they're in violation, they're in a higher point, so their surcharge is just higher.
Okay.
Their surcharge doesn't go away just because they went into violation. It's just.
But Todd.
And at the end of the day, it's cheaper for us to treat it than them, so they kind of wave their hat and go.
Well, I don't know if it was this one, but I asked that question some time ago, or maybe after I first came on, about this particular surcharge. And at the time, it was that there was, as long as we're covering the cost, and I think you brought up a point, Todd, I mean, there's no way that that one of these would be able to do it as effectively as we would.
Right.
But, okay.
And environmentally, it's better for us to do it, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, no, because environmentally, our water going out the back door has to be the same. So there's really no impact environmentally. It's just where the cost lies, and more importantly, really, the capacity. So, I mean, like I said, we've upgraded our aerators now, so I have a lot of aeration capacity out there. So we're not struggling to hit that.
And
but it's a matter of, as we develop and as we grow and as we do these capacity studies and things like that, where is that allocated and things like that?
Yeah, and these are our biggest customers, and we need to make sure that they're not viewed as the enemy and
that's absolutely
violation and whatnot. These are good guys.
That's been our balance in the past, is making sure we're protecting our ratepayers for what it costs to treat and trying to protect our capacity with the violation level. So the violation level is where we start protecting capacity and things like that. Surcharges, where we talk about the difference between what a our average rate payer pays versus industrial.
Yeah, another thing that hits at dealing with them, they want a return on investment in 2 or 3 years. Well, this type of equipment is very expensive, and it's seldom ever going to have that, so it never makes it to that decision process either.
Right. Make sure we got it.
That's all I got.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just real quick, I just want to appreciate Todd for giving me a tour this week, and it was very enlightening. So
you did the tour?
I did.
It's fantastic.
It is, and you know,
it was really good.
Very appreciative of everybody that works out there and does a great job. So yeah, very impressed.
They do a great job. Thank you very much. Everybody may or may not know Jerry Regner of the IT department. He's over our IT team. And I asked him, I knew we had a semi-short agenda. We don't see a IT report here every month because, well, number one, I wouldn't know what it all meant, what they did all month. But what we can say now, and I talked to him about this for several months, and he's put it together, is where we were several years ago and where we've come to and how important that is for the redundancy and the resiliency of this utility. It's incredibly important, and especially with all the software implementations and everything else. I wanted to shine the spotlight on the IT team real quick and give him, you know, a few minutes, 15 minutes or so, or whatever it takes, to show you just what goes on behind the scenes. I think it's that important.
Thank you. With that, I appreciate that. Yeah, thank you, Brian. And there, we've been through a lot, that's for sure. I mean, and we made a decision 3-4 years ago to modernize and to kind of move off of our legacy system. So a lot of what we talk about right now is just kind of in support of that. You know, we've come pretty far. So we talked about our cybersecurity in the past, and that's kind of where it starts for us. We've been really focusing heavily on that, as a lot of you know. And if you think, you know, 20 years ago, cybersecurity wasn't really a word, you know, and that's when you had one guy who's been here for 30 years, it wasn't a priority. It wasn't a priority of really any of us until it was one day, right? So we looked at our cybersecurity, and we felt the email was really the, you know, where we needed to start. That's where hackers almost always get in. You know, they send you like a phishing email. You go there, you put in your username and password, thinking you're logging into something, but you're just giving it to a hacker. That's very common. That's how people get in. So we didn't have really any protections on our emails, and what we did is we deployed all those things that filter out the phishing, the spam, the malware. We put indicators on our emails, those little banners that say this is from outside the organization, be careful what you click on. And adding things like the report phishing button, which actually had a pretty big impact, not just on people being able to safely get phishing messages to IT, but giving sort of a, it was an education piece, so to speak, helping people identify those messages. And getting protocols to protect our domain from impersonation. That one is pretty big. Let me show you. Bigger than it seems, but that protects us from impersonation. So if someone like in Russia has our email domain, and they just sent out a bunch of phishing emails saying no reply at rw.org, that's bad, right? So that protects not just our people, but it gets into, if they would send that to us, that would be an easy in for them because it would look like it's legitimate. So if we check our domain, and this is how we check all this stuff that we stood up. We check our domain on this website. It says, okay, you're good. You're protected against that kind of thing. And these are the protocols that we stood up to make that happen. It took a few months. But if you take a look at... Well, let's get down the screen. So this is, it's not protected. Not all these protocols are stood up. And this is public, this is out there, so anybody can see, all right, this is the one that doesn't, I can spoof their email address and say, I'm from springdaleir.gov. And if you look here, it says, you're not protected, we can help you with that. Give them lots of money and they'll help you fix that. We stood that up ourselves with our own resources. We've come to you guys for ComSys and all kinds of resources. We already had what we needed, we took care of it. So that's the email. Getting into the network side of it, we kind of had this sort of mentality. We had a firewall, bought it, we plugged it in, and we thought, all right, we're good. We're behind the firewall, right? No. It's one of those things where not only did we didn't really do much with it, but we bought all these licenses with it that the salesman said we needed, and they just kind of stood there unused because we didn't really know. It wasn't until we brought Mario onto the team where he had a cybersecurity background and he really showed us how to get things up and running. And from there, we deployed all kinds of firewall policies. Simple things like a country block. You can't access our network from outside of the country. Intrusion prevention, that was one of those licenses that just sat there, and that's finally now configured and deployed. IP block list is sort of an easy, neat thing that is basically maintained by the vendor, so we just need to point to it, but it's millions of known malicious IP addresses. If one is seen in our network, it just knocks it out. And as far as, cybersecurity, you totally my big effort or big focus on education and just educating users, because you can do all this standing up policies and stuff, but if a user clicks on that phishing email, it doesn't mean anything. So we do attack simulation training, which is basically we put out fake phishing emails, and if you get caught, you just get a training that you take. All of our new hires get that. So now we send them the phishing email, and we sit down with them, we show them all the indicators of why this is a phishing email, and then they gotta take the training. Password management has gotten pretty cumbersome with all these software integrations, so we've been looking at that, and as a way to help with the user experience, we deployed a password manager. So that helps with security too, because people try to make their passwords as simple as possible. This allows you to make them really hard to crack, and to get into your vault, you're just using your RW credentials, so it's a lot easier to deal with. Removing user accounts that have elevated access and generic common accounts has been, it's another huge thing, and I'll do a little more show and tell here. So I'll show you why that's super important, and if you go in our emails, think. Yeah, so this is an email from our firewall. And this is a critical event. And what this is saying is someone tried to access our network with the username VPN, and then the username user, and then the username admin, and then user again, and they tried test, and then user one, and then support, and then guest, and it goes on. And this is all from the same day, the same time, around 4 a.m. But this is the kind of thing, this is why having that stuff just out of our scope, it's a simple thing, but a big impact. It keeps us safe, so we don't have any of those common generic names. And, you know, I don't know, four, five years ago, we wouldn't have even known that this was occurring, but now our firewall is alert us with these things, and we can monitor that stuff. We still have that partnership with CISA, and this is our report card from them. When we first started with them, it did not have all these zero vulnerabilities. We had all kinds of issues, and we had to work quickly to remediate those things, but we've stayed good since. And this one is another one that isn't quite so good. This has 23 active vulnerabilities on it. This is one we don't talk about that often, but because if you look at the bottom here, it says 45% of those vulnerabilities have been fixed, and they've been fixed right here just in the last few months because we're starting to move to CityWorks and move to these new softwares and turn off these things. This is our legacy system. This isn't in our new stuff. This is in the old system, and that's why you're starting to see this stuff get remediated. And that's why we're phasing out the legacy system, those vulnerabilities. And I think a big driving factor was the fact that all that development and maintenance was one guy. And that is not good. So it's a difficult system to use. And this poor guy, you know, he couldn't take a vacation in 20 years without getting a phone call. Just, you know, the reports in print or something, you know, that should be simple, but it's just not. We made that decision to modernize, and moving big pieces off was, you know, we decided to go to Tyler. That would take our billing, accounting, financials, and then the asset management operations side would go to CityWorks. And we also, around that time, got Microsoft 365, which helps us with collaboration, but also a lot of the modernization pieces. And then 2 years ago, we started moving, and financials was the first big chunk that came off of that i7, that legacy system. And then a year ago, billing. And that was a huge, huge undertaking. It got a little ugly, got a little public, but that was smooth over. That's worked this much better. We changed our payment processor at the same time. And now we're at CityWorks. Just last month, we went live with CityWorks. And there's still, like Brian was talking about, still a lot of work to do on that, but big undertaking, you know. The timesheets, it's happening in Tyler now, and that's that project accounting piece that Brian was talking about. That is, we got about 2 months of pilot left, and then we're gonna go live with that in January. But right now, everybody's clocking into it along with their regular timesheets. We're kind of running both at the same time, so that should go pretty smooth. In addition to those big chunks, little pieces are coming off the i7, and there's integrations in the pipeline to get not really i7 stuff, but stuff that's standalone and bring it into the mix. And we got a lot of automations that we're having to kind of find a home for, because some stuff that got moved off of the legacy system, it broke something in the automation when it went to the new. Like billing is a good example. The i7 would do the billing and then send it to the printer. But now Tyler does the billing, but it doesn't send it to a local printer. So we had to manually take the file, zip it up, and move it to the printer. Pull up that section, and I'll show you what we've been working on for automation. we stood up, you know, this is using Microsoft 365 SharePoint. We were able to easily stand up this little website for the office girls, and they come in here, and all those manual things that got broken, they have a little button for it. And that's just little pieces that moved off of the i7. And we have our IT version. This is our own little web page that we created. And we have automation that can, you know, send text messages to customers. You can put a phone number here and send them a text, or put a whole file in here, pick a message, send 300 people a text. That's another, you know, these are just little pieces we've been working on, bringing off the legacy system, putting them into the newer system where, you know, it still gets complicated, but there is a pool of talent out there available that knows Microsoft 365 and automation and that kind of thing, but not necessarily on the i7. We even found a home to post our training videos here, and what sort of started happening, just us finding, you know, these little solutions to automate, we're starting to build out what's becoming an intranet. So, if you just take off the IT and put HR at the end of that, you get Dana's little web page too. And it's all kind of in its infancy, but this is the beginning of something that has a lot of potential. And that's kind of what's being born out of moving stuff with that old system. And then this is the final thing. So this is our whiteboard in IT. And if you look on the left there, you know, we had to brainstorm what are all the things that are on, lives on the i7, we need to find a home for. And it feels really good to cross those things off. Sometimes they're really big check marks. And if you look where it says timesheets, that circle there, that's it. That's the last thing. Mm-hmm. And then we're done. We're off the i7 and into the new world. So that's it, guys. If there's any questions, I'll take them.
When do you want to cross that last one off?
That's January 1.
Right. What do you do then
when you don't have a list to cross off?
It's
already
on vacation. And
I think that list started in here with the good old tripod and white pages, and it covered all the walls, had all the teams in here. It was much larger than that. I don't remember how many items you guys had on that list.
It was a few hundred, and it was just like very basic things that need to be done and very advanced things that need to be done. We had to take those items and sort of, okay, what's easy, what's low-hanging fruit, right? And what's complicated and what's really critical and what's not so critical. And we had to prioritize it that way. And we've come a long way since that list, but yeah.
We definitely dodged some bullets from where we were not too long ago. Appreciate you.
For a hacker, what's the primary, what is it that they're after? I mean, you covered a lot of ground, but what is a hacker looking for to come into the system?
Yeah, I mean, typically it's, you know, they're looking for money in some sort of way. And it's usually ransomware is a very trendy thing, I guess, or common thing right now. There's ransomware as a service. And if you saw those usernames that people were trying to use, they use those because they're known. It's known to work, you know. So ransomware as a service checks off these boxes. Okay, you can get into this place. A lot of times they hack you just knowing that you can get in. Like they'll farm credentials with the phishing email, get it, get you hacked, and be like, all right, we can get in. Now we can sell these credentials on the black market. So if it's not that, it's ransomware. It's locking down your system and making.
You hear a lot about that. I just didn't know. And that's what I was trying to say. That's specific to RWU, but I didn't know if it's once they're in, is it looking at customer data, you know, for people who have, you know, if it's set up, if you're tied to an auto draft, you're tied to the bank, if they're gathering that information, or if it's just specifically RWU, ransomware. And also, we carry a lot of balances. I mean, I have access to bank accounts. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, very good.
Thank you.
So, I have to use the restroom. Is that okay if I can make a very quick trip? I've been doing the boots to book.
You'll be right back. You'll be right back. You want to start with number two?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. You guys have been busy.
Brian, why don't you come on up? Who's good? We got engineer proposals after the next hour. Can we go ahead and start while he's going to the bathroom?
Oh, yeah.
Back to the engineer proposal.
Yes, you'd like me to go ahead and start?
Sure.
Now, this looks like it's just a...
He might be.
While you're scrolling, I don't think his his reports did not make it in. I don't think the packet, unless I missed them. Do you mind emailing those out?
Yeah, we could email it out. There's a reason we don't put it into the public.
Is that okay to do?
Yeah,
that?
Yeah.
Because I know they weren't in there on those reviews.
We just didn't want to put it out to the
public. Yeah, I just didn't see. Yeah. Are y'all okay with that?
You bet.
I just didn't see them before they were in there, so thank you.
Interesting.
Okay, so this is a request for we're asking the commission to look at two agreements here, potential agreements. The basis for this is that, you know, I'm sure I've stood here before and talked about the issues with density. We've been seeing with townhomes and multifamily replacing, you know, what was designed or used to be single-family residences, and so we're seeing more and more developments where we have concerns about downstream sewer capacity, and for each one of these areas where we have concerns, we ask the engineer to provide a sewer study on these areas. More often than not, actually almost all the time, what we get in return is a bunch of spreadsheets with, you know, multiple tabs and calculations and assumptions and projected flow quantities, existing flow quantities based on how many hundreds of residences are in this area, and basically just the math backing up their estimates as to whether or not this sewer basin can handle what this new development's going to send to it. At the same time, you know, we've invested in, you know, we spent $500,000 on a wastewater master plan for the collection system and the pollution control facility. And part of that was developing an electronic model of our entire system in the city of Rogers. That model is not detailed such that, you know, it has every manhole invert all the way, you know. It really concentrates on some of the main lines, and it makes some assumptions for those smaller 8 and 6/8, 10 inch lines, you know, up in some of these residential areas. So our thought here was to offer to utilize the resources of our consultant in order to perform these sewer capacity studies. And share that cost with the developer that needs the services done. And the idea here is that, you know, it'll save public resources by eliminating our time reviewing all these spreadsheets, because we know what goes into the model. It's gonna help the developer, I think, because it's gonna give them a faster recommendation, because, you know, we're basically just plugging some information into the model that we already have. So the first thing we have here is a scope of services, and this would be attached to a task order that's under a master agreement with Friess & Nichols as the firm that we choose to do this modeling based on their qualifications and the fact that they've produce the model for the wastewater master plan. The second agreement would be between RWU and individual developers seeking this service, which I've outlined here, which is a cost-sharing agreement for 50% of the services. To translate that into dollars for RWU, depending on the complexity of the study, we're looking at anywhere from about $3,000 to $6,000 per study. So a 50% cost share, we're looking at $1,500 to $3,000 per. I would assume we would do maybe one of these a month, maybe one every 2 months. So you know, we're looking at a pretty minimal investment from the utility to get this done. And I think it's gonna, every one of these we do, we're gonna get more detail into the model, and that's gonna make our model that much better for the next time we go back and rework this wastewater master plan.
Why do y'all feel the need to cost share?
Well,
because you're getting something in your model, so it standardizes it for you. But other than that, I mean, they're developing in Rogers.
Correct. We're both benefiting from the situation, and we didn't feel like we wanted to be as heavy-handed as to say you're required to use our consultant.
Yeah.
And so in that situation, the engineer may very well say, well, we don't want to pay $5,000 for this. We're going to do it ourselves. So now we're back to the spreadsheets, and you know, our model's not improving. So you know, we kind of tossed around some numbers, but we felt like for the cost, the 50% was going to be a fair and equitable for both parties.
And I think you're going to have a lot of relieved engineers that they don't have to do a sewer analysis, and I think it's going to be a win-win for everybody. So I think.
So Brian, specifically when are they having to be done on any sort of development anywhere in town, or is there, what's the guidelines that triggers this?
That's a little bit of a judgment. See what's downstream of it. You know, we've just generally, you know, an 8-inch pipe can handle about somewhere in the neighborhood of 450 to 500 units. So if we see that that there's an 8-inch pipe that serves 200 homes, and then a developer wants to build a 300-unit apartment complex, that's going to throw up a red flag, and we're going to tell them you need to perform a super study. Now, if we can do a quick back of the napkin calculation and see, yeah, you're going to be fine, we have no concerns. But it's kind of a judgment call on our part to determine when this is needed.
Okay.
This your, in with what Travis just said, but your baseline is really the master plan that we've already done. Because really, that's to me, that's where you kind of start. And if you looked at how, you know, the land uses, you know, the densities, and like you said, there was a day and time it was all single-family residential. Now everything is mixed use, and that is a different. So if you use that master plan as the base, if it deviates from that, that's when you don't know, okay, now what impact does that have, at least for the flow. So.
Right, and I mean, to your point, we made some assumptions based on the master land use plan for the city of Rogers. But I think the granularity that we're getting into really doesn't get down to the specifics of what's needed for each one of these developments, especially the way that the health department's going to review it. The master plan kind of considered these large areas of town and how that was going to impact, you know, some of our larger transmission trunk lines through town. It didn't really get into considering to a real detailed level, you know, if this develops to this density, what's going to happen to these smaller feeder lines? So that's kind of what.
Well, it doesn't provide that if developer gets a checklist, I've got to do this, and if you say I've got to do it, I've got to do it. If the data doesn't really, if we're not taking the data and using it for any value, then it's just something they've got to do. They're going to spend. It's just a cost of doing business. So if, again, putting it into a model where it actually gives us the benefit. I was kind of the question is, well, if they've got to do it anyway, they have the 100% of the cost. So for us then to split it, and whether you did a 50-50, or you could even do it,
in, you could graduate, it could be a 60-40. But the end result is the value to RWU is the fact that we're actually going to start getting data that has meaning that we can use down the road. Otherwise, it's just the developers checked it off. I got to pay $5,000, got to do it, mark it off, let's move on to the next thing.
And it's consistent. It goes into the same model. It's not pieces and parts, it's the same software.
Peter, you know as well as I do, if you have five engineers do the same study, you're going to get five different answers. It will give us something consistent. And to your point, yes, this will be saved in that model. So the next time we go, and you know, we're going to improve this model with every 5 years, we're going to do one of these sewer studies. And so our hope is that if that model continues to improve and continues to get more detailed. So that was kind of a big discussion when we started on the master plan, is how detailed do we want to be with this thing? We could, you know, we could spend $1 million, you know, getting real detailed all over town, but you know, what we wanted to really hit the highlights and really say, okay, what do we really need to take care of now? What do we need to put the high beams on for?
I remember one of the first things I think when I came on the commission, it was that the comment was, I think it was the line going through Pinnacle. And I think somewhere along the way, someone says, if we don't do this, we can't stop developing. And I said, you know, I'm thinking about all the uptown, everything that's been going in uptown. If you said, we're done, sorry, you can't do anything else because we don't have capacity. This keeps us, it sounds like it keeps us, we're looking for staying ahead of it rather than going, sorry, you can't develop.
A uniform process, everyone will have to participate. Department of Health is probably going to request a lot of
things.
That makes sense. You've been on this a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
Capacity studies, they'll be dictated.
Who did the capacity analysis last time? Was it Friesen Nichols? Is this where you got the initial model?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, just curious.
So I don't have a problem. This is a good thing. What I would hate to see is everybody has to pay this fee. Even though that we know there's not an issue for capacity here, but we've got to make them pay their $5,000 in order. That is not doing. Yeah, I mean, just cost of development for, you know, 20 years from now, how many fees are people going to be paying to build a small subdivision? We got picking and choosing where it's needed is good, but hopefully it will not ever morph into. It's just something we got to check the box, so we got to spend the money. And in order to cover ourselves, you know, that'll end up being what things morph to, just for covering our own. We're going to have to require this, even though the dude is right next to the treatment plant. And
I mean, I can say for our part, we're going to use our judgment now.
Yeah.
You know, if this gets through RWU and goes to the health department, health department has concerns. You know, we try to, if we can head off some of those health department issues by using some good judgment and then, you know, communicating with the health department that, you know, here, this is why we think this is obviously not going to be a problem.
Yeah.
We can do that.
But they're not always going to agree with that.
They're not always going to agree.
So. Yeah, I get what
you're saying.
And
Travis, I will tell you, a certain city that I may or may not work for may have gotten behind on some of these studies, and now we have to ask for it on every development because we get a little behind on the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's worthwhile to ask for it on the front end before the system is under capacity.
Yeah, I see that.
So I'd rather for the system's benefit, I'd rather ask for too much than not enough. But I do understand the flip side of that development cost when you don't need it. But
at the same time, if somebody is adding a bathroom onto their house and they're in these places, guess what? Your study for this is going to cost more than your new bathroom.
Exactly.
And
that's, I hope we don't get there.
Yeah.
So, I do want to stress that this is in no way required for them to enter into this agreement. We're still going to allow them to do it if they want to.
Good.
But if you use our guy, then we'll contribute because there's a public benefit.
So for my own ignorance here, the software for these models, is this something that other engineers, I mean, if they had this file, they could also do the same thing and save money for the developer? It's not.
He's the consultant.
The model is Innovyze, it's InfoWorks model.
Yeah. So it's CAD-based, everything's CAD-based, or Autodesk.
We could consider sharing that model. I think we'd have to, we'd probably have to ensure that we could give, I think we could share that model if somebody wanted to do that using our model. I'd have to look.
Yeah, and I'm sure Robert would make us. Robert's back there sweating right now. So if we're gonna have to sign all these disclaimers and
copyrights, whatever that is.
So if an engineering firm had that software and they could do their own, they could just do their own. And if that is meaningful data that we could put into our system, I understand that. The advantage would be if you're a developer, if you then had, if there's an agreement with RWU and this entity, and you can get a better deal by going with them through this agreement, they could actually save some money.
They're going to do that. They're going to do it every time because it takes the work off their back. They pass it to Friends and Nichols.
Well, no, what I'm saying is if, in my understanding, they have our model. They've got to have that. They can't just build their own new model of our system. They would have to have that, correct?
They could build a model of our system. It'd take a lot of work.
Well, yeah, but can they not upload it? I mean, if it was...
You don't want them touching... I don't think you want them touching your model. I think you want them given the piece that they've modeled. You stick it in your model. You don't want them having the ability, free reign over it.
Yeah, and I'm the skeptical... cynical person that phrase, you know, when we look at this 5 years from now, it started out at $1,500 and all of a sudden they're gigging us for 20 grand. It's like, yeah, you don't have a choice because nobody else can effectively build this.
Works. I mean, it's Autodesk. It's pretty standardized across the board. I mean, I can get an InfoWorks today. It's the industry standard.
Yeah, I'm totally ignorant.
I'll say that in terms of software, it's very expensive. I mean, it's probably $20,000 per seat per year of this type of software. Some of the larger firms will have it. The smaller firms that do a lot of work, even some of the larger firms that do a lot of development work here in Rogers aren't gonna have this. I can see if a large firm was working on a large development that they could get a model of a copy of our model. I think we have to take some steps to ensure that they didn't do anything to revise that model in a way that, you know,
benefited.
Spreads out to other people using
it.
This way gives us a little bit more control over. We kind of have a non-biased third party.
And again, my concern is the long term. I think right now it's going to be great. A year from now, it's going to be great. 10 years from now, all of a sudden it is a different beast. We probably need to keep our eyeball on it.
With it being the industry standard in the future, if we felt like Freeze was taking advantage of us, we could do a different provider.
I totally agree with you, 100%, because it's Autodesk, it's pretty standardized. They can go to any engineering firm and they're gonna be able to use that same InfoWorks.
I will reiterate that is our model.
Yeah.
We paid for it. We can always take that and give it to another firm if we feel like we're not being treated fairly.
Yeah.
Very good.
So with the agreement, if we move forward, then we have an agreement with Friess and Nichols. And I just looked to see if the terms and conditions has an effective date. So we could build in a time frame if we want to evaluate it, whether it's a year or 2 years down the road,
to
prevent having an issue. I just didn't see, and this is to be determined, but it just said it didn't have a date, effective date, but it didn't have a period. So we could build that in if we want to have a call and we can say that we're
going to work.
And that's between us and Friess and Nichols. And then each individual developer then would enter into an agreement with them under our agreement.
Correct. Okay. I'm sorry. each individual developer would enter into an agreement with RWU, and we have an agreement with Friesen Nichols.
Thank you. Clarify. Okay.
Okay.
Would the commission prefer that we put a date of 1 year on this master agreement to look at these?
I think it's a good idea, just in general.
Yeah. We can see how it goes and renew it.
Evaluation period.
Yeah, I think anything in general, that's good. Good idea.
So just help me understand, just so I'm new. So if the study came back and this group says, gosh, we don't have enough, you know, that puts you over the limit for with that development, then what happens with on our end of things?
So on our end, as far as the cost of the engineering services, we're going to require them to reimburse that 50% within 7 days. So
right.
we'll have our money before.
But the results of the study, what next? What happens next?
The results of the study, they'll usually have two options. There'll be some recommendations on what it's going to take to improve the downstream sewer in order to provide that capacity. And, you know, based on, you know, depending on the cost of that, it might be more cost than the developer could bear, and they might delay or scrap the project. Either way, they'll have a couple of recommendations. Either capacity is good, you're okay,
right.
Forward. Capacity is not okay, you need to make these downstream improvements, or make the downstream improvements, and that's just not feasible.
Okay.
Or alter the project.
Right. Or
alter the project. Mm-hmm. And they would have that full, they would have to have all of the expenses, 100% of the expenses to fix whatever, even though they were the ones that just kind of put it over the top. They.
Sometimes
we'll cost share certain things.
Okay.
It makes sense in the model.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. No, I just, it's good so information for understanding.
It's becoming an issue. I mean, capacity is.
Yeah,
obviously. Yeah. Do we have, is there a map out there of potential problem areas? I mean, I know we've looked at where some of the bottlenecks are, but mm-hmm. what areas? Right now, I think developers here, even if, I mean, they're building a duplex or whatever, they're, oh, I got sewer at the road, I'm fine. Like, maybe not.
Generally, I know we haven't published a map like that. We have some areas that was identified in the wastewater master plan that's generally on the south side and the south, far south and far east sides of town. Really anything on the south side of town and east of the railroad tracks is going to be a concern. Just because we have those capacity improvements to make. But as far as publish a map and put it on our website we haven't
done that. No, and I think there's an ignorance out there right now because again people are looking at stuff like, wow, it's got sewer, it says so right there on the listing, they buy it and then all of a sudden they can't, and just throws us into the mix. Not that we're liable, but
and we're basing the sizing of our system on the zoning map.
I was going to say, that's the biggest.
The density maps that they make, we're obligated to serve. Anything beyond that.
Yeah, how do y'all coincide with when Rogers does a new land use map, how do y'all, are y'all coinciding your sewer studies with those?
Yeah, we're good.
We will.
That's a lot of things going on. As soon as I said that. So that's
part of that master plan process. Our consultants will planning and say, well, what is your current master land use plan?
Well, I know that they're probably on a set schedule. I know we are. Do y'all try to mirror that like a year behind them or something along those lines?
We don't. I mean, the way we've been doing is we try to do these every 5 years.
Okay. Okay.
We did that with our water master plan, and of course the wastewater finished it last year, so
we're
about 4 more years.
We'll
do another one. So.
Okay.
This is something you'll need to do now. I mean, we've had a lot of discussion. Maybe we spent more time on this than we did the budget. So, not to say anything about numbers. But, so, I think if you scroll down, it had, I think you have recommendations. And so is this, so I guess after the master, have a master agreement with Freeson Nichols too.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I may, under our new rules of procedure, it's sufficient to move to approve an item by number and name as presented. The reason I say that is it's a lot.
That is a lot of verbiage. So I don't have a number on that one.
That's item of business, new business number two. Yeah, you could, for example, a commissioner could make a motion to approve item of new business number two, engineering proposal for targeted sewer capacity studies for proposed development. And if anybody wanted to add an amendment, for example, to instruct the utility to include in the contract a term of 1 year, you could do that.
Okay, that you saved me a lot of verbiage.
Our commissioner needs to say that.
Thank you. Do I have any motions to approve new business item number two, engineering proposal for targeted sewer capacity studies for proposed developments?
So moved.
Maybe. You
make it, that, but we need to add
the
we need to amend it for the year. So,
somebody needs to make move. It would be, for example, I move to approve item of new business number two, engineering proposal for targeted sewer capacity studies for proposed development as presented, with the amendment that the contract with Freeson Nichols have an initial term of 1 year.
Crap, why
do I need to make that?
No,
somebody else has to make that motion.
The chair needs to entertain a motion.
You just say. Okay, I will make a motion that we pass new business item number two, engineering proposal for targeted sewer capacity studies for proposed development with a 1 year
amendment.
Review date.
Amendment 1 year. Okay, yeah. I'm not happy with that.
Mr. Chairman, this is the motion is right on. The only thing I would suggest is adding the word as presented and then making the amendment to be 1 year from the initial term of the contract. The Freeson Nichols.
Do I need to do that?
No, I think if the chair will announce that that is the motion on the floor,
I think that is the motion on the floor.
I will second that.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say
aye.
Aye. All opposed nay. The ayes carry 5-0.
And if you say nay, you can do it.
I thought it wasn't just me getting in trouble.
Oh, gosh.
Procedure rules.
Thank you for keeping us lined up.
Appreciate y'all. What you see before you is a resolution authorizing the director to file a request for exclusion from a certain class action settlement. The class action settlement is something we got in the mail. You know that every water utility is getting in the mail. There's been a settlement with DuPont and all of their subsidiaries about this, the PFAS. And one of those requirements, they sent it to you if you're a public water utility to be involved in that class action, which there's several $1 billion in it. You had to have gotten your water from a water provider that has tested for and found PFAS in their system. We have not. Beaver Water has never found PFAS in their system, in their water, excuse me. So therefore, you can't just do nothing. You have to opt out. If you do nothing, you're part of that, and you can never come back. So you have to do this so that you retain your rights to sue them at some point in time in the future if something ever happened to Beaver Lake.
I make a motion to approve new business item number three, resolution 2330, authorizing opt-out of the PFAS class action as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed nay. You were smooth as silk on that one. I'm just going.
As was.
Well, what's the difference when you have this on there?
Aaron's out today, so I'm going to.
is staffing with Thanksgiving and all the holidays?
It's
skeleton group.
It's pretty. Wednesday's getting.
You forgot deer season.
I'm going tomorrow morning. Today was my last day of work, so fully understand exactly what you're talking about.
Wednesday we're going to be about half the staff. Today and tomorrow we're pretty much full staff. So, so this is the large diameter sewer project. This is the Blossom Way repairs. Up in here, we had just some minimal overages on that, some additional dewatering for basically waiting on the gas company to move their line. We had to do some trench dewatering. We had quite a few change orders on, or actually overages on quantities, and one major change order on the Turtle Creek, that's 24th and Olive. They ran into some, found a, what we had surveyed as a manhole, it was actually a pretty large vault underground that had to completely be replaced. It had tree roots growing into it. It was some old work for
my bodies, I hope.
But they had to replace a pretty large vault in there, take some trees out, and replace a little bit more line. There was also a mistake in our initial bid quantities where we had neglected to include footage of pipe through a casing under 24th Street, and so that being said, we included a $100,000 allowance with this project, which we have burned through, and burned through an additional $47,190, and I'm asking your permission to allocate funding for the additional $47,190 for this project. We're nearly complete with it.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
A motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed nay. All right. The ayes have it on mid business item 4.
Thank you very much.
With that, I think we will adjourn the November 20th, 2023 Rogers Water Sewer Commission meeting. Thank you. Is that normal I got there at the end?
I think you can help me with that last one.